All right, so swapping, thinking about NIM again, what we're gonna try to do now is write down a circuit that will make the computer play a perfect game of NIM. That is to say, if a person was playing against this circuit, each time the person made a choice, the circuit would respond with exactly the right answer, so that if it was possible to win, it would win. So let's think about how that would work. Let's say this is NIM 5 bots. So we're going to create a robot or a computerized player for playing NIM when there are 5 objects left. And we're going to let the human being go first. So the human being, so we're going to represent this now as a tree. It's kind of a flow diagram. It says initially there are 5 left, and then there's a choice. The person can either take 1 or take 2. If the person, and then these are going to be switches. We're going to represent these as Boolean values. Does the person choose take 1 or does the person choose take 2? If the person chooses to take 1, that's going to leave us with 4 objects. And what's our response if we're going to play optimally? We take 1, leaving 3, right? So in this case, the next time that the human gets a chance to make a move, there will be 3 left, right? 5 minus the 1 that the person took minus the 2 that we took is 3. On the other hand, if the person took 2, that was bad for us, right? That's going to leave 3, which means that the person is now in a winning position. So we're going to take 1 because it's maybe a little less obvious. That's just because we don't know what else to do. So we take 1 and that leaves 2 left. So now there's 2 possibilities. Either we're here, the person's now playing with 3 left, or we're here and the person's playing with 2 left. If we're here and the person's playing 3 left, it doesn't matter. The person can again choose either to take 1 or 2. If the person takes 1, then we're going to take... There's 3 left. The person takes 1. We're trying to take the last object, so we take 2. And that means we win. C for computer wins. On the other hand, if the person takes 2, we take 1. And again, the computer wins. On the other hand, if the person's in the 2 left state and the person takes 1 away, then we'll take the last one and win because the person was being an idiot. If on the other hand, if there's 2 left and the person takes 2, then the user won. The computer did not win, the user won. Alright? So this tree represents the strategy that we're going to try to implement with logical components, ands and ors. Alright, so this is the strategy we're going to create. And so here it is in a kind of a logical representation. So think about creating this as if it were made out of actual switches and light bulbs. You could actually do this if you had switches and light bulbs and batteries. And so here's how it's going to go. So 5 left is one of the light bulbs, and that's always on, because in the beginning, the first round, there's 5 left. The 3 left light bulb is only going to go on if the take 1 switch is turned on. So if the person decides to take 1, then that's going to cause the 3 left light bulb to go on. On the other hand, if the take 2 switch gets thrown, then the 2 left light bulb should go on. So these are really, we don't have to wire these up, right? We just make something that looks like this. This is the switch that the person's going to flip. This is the take 1 switch, and this is the 3 left light bulb. Okay, so if the person does this switch, then that light bulb's going to go on. That's just the easiest thing in the world to edit. Maybe not the easiest. I could edit a chocolate bar. That is actually fine. A little bit easier. All right, now comes the more complicated little bit of circuitry. When does the computer win light go on? Well, the computer win light goes on if the 3 left light bulb was on, and the person on the second move took either 1 or 2, or if the 2 left light bulb was on, and the person took did the take 1 switch. Right? So if that wasn't completely clear, just you have to think about this diagram again. The cases in which the computer, there's a little light bulb that says, computer wins, right? That ends the game. When does that go on? It goes on if this light bulb's on and either of these switches is thrown. Right? Or if this light bulb's on and this switch is thrown. Otherwise, this user light is going to go on. The user wins light is going to go on. Okay? So those are the things that we have to encode. So the user wins if the 2 left light bulb was on and the take 2 switch on a second turn is turned on. All right? So all this is, it's just ands, ors, There's one little bit of trickiness here that, is there a trickiness? Yeah, one little bit of trickiness, no, never mind. This is actually, yeah, here it is. There's two different circuits that depend on the take two switch, the take two on the second round switch. So if that switch is thrown, it has to participate in turning on this light bulb, but it also has to participate in turning on this light bulb. Do you remember how we saw a very simple example of that in the last lecture? We needed a special kind of switch. It wasn't just a switch that closes one wire. It was a double throw switch. It was a switch that when you put it down, it causes two wires to connect. And so that's what we're going to do. We're going to build a switch that actually completes this circuit and also completes this circuit. So if you tediously play around with Keynote long enough, you stare at this description, you draw a bunch of things like that look like that, you eventually come and then you redraw it three times to make sure it actually fits on the screen. This is it. This is the light bulb switch circuit that implements the strategy that we just showed. So here are the light bulbs. This is the 5 left light bulb. This is the 3 left light bulb. This is the user wins light bulb, computer wins, and the 2 left light bulb. And then here are the switches that we're going to use to actually play against the computer. If we want to take 1 on the first round, we close this switch. If we want to take 2 on the second round, then we close this double throw switch. We also have another double throw switch for taking 1. Is that strictly necessary? All right, but anyway, do you see this piece right here, where if we put the take, if on the first round we take one object away, the 3 left light bulb goes on. That's in here. It should be in here. Yeah, here it is. So here's the battery. It's powering up this wire. Here's the switch that we said we want to take 1 on the first move. We close this switch, and now the power flows through here, and it lights up the 3 left light bulb. You and then you. Go ahead.
How do you
know about
the double throw switch for the first move?
It's just the way that you need it.
But if they took 2 in the first move, like, then that's when you need it, right?
If they take 2 in the first move, yeah, so then we close this switch, then this light bulb goes on, but the winning light bulbs don't go on unless one of these switches gets thrown.
Okay.
So we just didn't seem to need it.
Okay.
But what makes the 5 left light turn off?
Nothing, because this basically means, it's a good question. It would be more elegant if there was one light bulb saying, there's 5 left, and then after you make that move, that light bulb goes off. We could do that, but it would be really helpful if we had a not gate, right? That would mean that when this light bulb is on, as long as neither of these two are on, not this or not that. No, sorry, not this and not that. But we don't have a way to do nots at the moment. So this was easier. So this light bulb says there was 5 left in the very first round of the game. That's all that bulb means. Doesn't mean there's still 5 left. It was a bit of a cheat. All right, does anybody want to stare at this a little longer? Any other questions about this? So in principle, with this little Radio Shack, when I was little, I used to play with these little Radio Shack things, but they had little springs, and you put the wire in, you close the spring, and you could actually wire a little something like this. And it ought to play in. Yes?
When you say 3 left, that means there's 3 moves left?
No, sorry, 3. We're imagining that there's 5 of these R's.
Yeah.
Initially, and then the user can take 1 or 2, leaving 3 or 2. So this is how many objects are left in the game. You're trying to be the one to take the last object.
But if there's 5 in the beginning and you take 1, why is there 3 after that? Wouldn't that be 4?
Ah, because we're also encoding in this, the user is going to take 1, but then the computer, the circuit, is going to take 1 more.
Oh, okay. Oh, you're skipping over.
Yeah, we're showing, this is, it's from the user's perspective, that's what it's going to look like. You've got 5 left, what do you want to do? You flip a switch. Now you've got 3 left.
So it's just by the logic.
Exactly. So I started out with the strategy, and then I went from the strategy to the logical leap, and then I went from the logic leap to actually a wiring diagram. All right. So, in principle, we ought to be actually able to play this. So let's give it a whack.
How do you bring up that little screen that you just brought up?
Apple Tab.
All right.
Which reminds me of a joke.
Are you going to tell us the joke?
I don't know. My jokes never, ever, ever work. What am I trying to do? Oh, that's not what I wanted to do. Sorry.
Does that have to do with soda?
It has to do with soda, yeah.
You probably shouldn't tell
it. I probably shouldn't tell it because soda is like a... It's politically incorrect.
Tab is before.
Tab is back, right? Who's heard of a soda called Tab? Tab is back. Thank you.
Why is he doing that? Can I do Control Q?
I'm trying to do.
I want to suspend something in Emacs.
Control Z.
Yeah, but it's suspending Emacs.
I have no idea.
Oh, none of the keys are working. This buffer is read only. Oh. Okay, that was only funny to me. All right, NIM 5. All right. So this is what happens if you actually grab image icons from the web and they pretend they're actually switches and light bulbs. So this is what I had in my head when I was drawing that wiring diagram. So here we are. We've got light bulbs. We've got the switches for each of the different rounds that we can play. We can take one or two objects away. So this light bulb being on, you can see it's on because it's yellow. This light bulb being on means that there's five objects left and it's our turn. So we can, excuse you, or whatever you say when someone makes that noise. We can now choose to either flip the switch that says take one or flip the switch that says take two. So let's do take two. We do take two. And right, so it's now skipping the computer's turn internally. Person took one away, there should be four left, but then the computer took two away, so now we're left with two objects. So now the person decides to take, oh, I don't know, say one. So we flip this switch, and oh, the computer won, right? So this just did, this is actually an implementation of that wiring diagram that I just showed. Okay? If I had won, the user had won, then one of these light bulbs would have gone on. Okay? So, any questions about this? I'm gonna give you the code for this so you can run it at home, and I'll have some. I'll have a question on the homework about what happens when you whatever. So you can play with the switches. Okay. Now we can also do it. There's no reason not to do it with a lot more objects.
Do you have to start out with a certain number, multiples or something, or does it not matter?
Well, the game is defined for any number of initial objects. But if we want it to be so that the first person who goes is definitely has a way to win, then we make sure that there is a multiple of three. In this case, the first person
has a way to lose.
We have a way to beat the first person no matter what. Well, anyway, we're the first person and we've got 10 left. So we're going to take one. The computer took two and left us with eight. We're going to take, two? That left the computer with six, the computer took another two, leaving with four. We're going to take one.
We have to go switch up.
Oh, you're right. Thank you. I need to make this just a tiny bit smaller. All right, so then there were two left. Oh, it's our turn and there's two left. Now we'll take the last two.
We can't see the bottom.
Yeah, we don't get the satisfaction of actually seeing that we won because the light bulbs are off the bottom of the screen. And there's nothing I can do about it, right? Anyway, all right. So it's easy to define a NIM-10. It's just a simple generalization of the NIM-5 that we have. But, and this is where the but gets important. This is the logic. When I went to write down a strategy for NIM-10, this is what it ended up looking like. Which is considerably more involved. It's not actually really much more involved. You can see that move 3 has just, it's just an OR of two things from the previous set, and Win5A is just an AND or some previous thing. So it's all just ORs and ANDs. There's no NOTs. There's nothing tricky. But there's, if you notice, there's some things like, oh, I don't know, is 3F3, is that one of them? There's some of these things where you actually need like triple throw and quadruple throw switches. And also getting all these components to actually fit on the screen was more than I could possibly handle. So it's very awkward to actually create this out of switches and light bulbs and things. I did try to do it, but I couldn't do it. And really, some of the switches really are used in multiple places, more than double throw. Some of the values are reused in different parts of the circuit. Like I wanted a value to be able to be not only light a light bulb, but then be used as input to some other circuit in some other way. And I didn't want those circuits to interfere with each other. And I just couldn't hold it all in my head at one time. This is not a good way to build a computer. This is just not going to work out. We need some nicer way of doing reduction, of making it so that a logical operation, we can just put it in a box and stop worrying about the internals of it. These ANDs and ORs made out of switches don't have that property.
They can interfere with one another. If I put the output of one of these switches into the input of another one, we can create a short circuit and the whole circuit doesn't really work anymore. If we had to build a computer that way, we would go insane. So that's not what we're going to do. We're actually going to build them a slightly different way that's going to make it easy. So here's the new approach. That's not the new approach. That's just the introduction to the new approach. All right, this is it. This is the idea. So this one, you have to stare at this a little bit, because I tried this last semester, and a lot of people never quite got their heads around it. So we're going to create a new kind of component. It's still wires and electricity and so forth, but it's this thing in a box. It's a relay. And here's how it goes. It's a switcher. What it does is it's got, and I'm going to just think of this as a magnet, because I don't know how else to think about it. There's in the box here, there's a switch that can be on or off. Instead of a person reaching and switching the switch on and off, there's a magnet. And when that magnet, it's an electromagnet, when there's power going through it, the magnet turns on, and that opens the switch. It kind of lifts it up for us. Person doing our bidding in here. When we stop current flowing through it, this turns off, and a spring closes the switch again. Okay? So power on this wire, electromagnet goes on, switch is open, this is now, it's off. So when this is on, this wire is off. When this is off, this wire is on. Okay? Useful thing to be able to do. And so let me show you how we actually use this. Well, let's step through this example first. So here, we've got a battery connected up to two wires. This wire goes right into the relay on the bottom. This wire goes into a switch first, and then goes into the magnet on the relay, closes the circuit. Here, the output of this wire goes to a light bulb. So, when we open this switch, the switch is now in the false position. Power stops flowing through here. That causes this switch to close, which completes the circuit, and the light goes on. On the other hand, if we close this little bit of circuit here, the switch, then that turns the electromagnet on, which if you ever looked at an electromagnet, they glow purple and look like stars. And that star causes the switch to open up, breaks the connection, and the light goes off. So, switch on, light off. Switch off, light on. In other words, what kind of circuit do we have here? What logical operation is this? It's not, right? It's an inverter. It's switching the sense of the switch. If the switch is off, the light is on, and vice versa. Could you build something where if the switch is off, the light is off, and the switch is on, the light is still off? Yeah, we're just going to cut this wire, right? All right, so it's the full knot that's a problem, not just turning things off. Anybody can turn things off. It's turning things off at the right time. All right, so this is cool. This is a switcher now. It's an electrically activated switch. So now instead of people having to go and mess with switches all the time, the circuit can do its own switching, which sounds a little creepy, right? Because now they can take over the world. Okay, maybe that's not how you see it, but we're basically giving it a degree of autonomy. It can actually flip its own switches. It can sort of program itself in a way. All right, so now here's a more complicated circuit involving two relays. I'm going to count three relays. All right, now let's see what this guy actually does. So this is why I wanted you to stare at the previous screen, because this screen will make very little sense if you don't understand how the individual relay boxes work. So here's what we've got. We've got two switches, switch A and switch B. And we're going to step through all... No, it's okay. I just feel bad. I hate that feeling when you're just a whole day. It's the sad kind of nose blowing, right? It's like I've done this 10,000 times. So we've got two switches. How many different ways can we set those two switches? We can turn them both off. What are the total number of combinations we got? I hear four. I hear six. Who said 32? No, nobody else. Four? Six? Anybody want to argue for four? Why four?
Yeah, both false.
Both false.
Or both true.
Both true.
One false and true.
One false, so that's three.
And then true.
Oh, you could end the other way.
Yeah.
The first one false, second one true, the first one false, true, the second one false.
Both true, both false. Those are the only four combinations. I don't know where the six comes from.
Oh, that was me.
Okay. What were the other two?
Oh, I don't know. I thought it was like.
All right. So those are the four combinations. And that's because we've got, it's two bits, and each one can be in two different positions. Multiply two times two, you get four. All right. So we're going to look at all four cases and see what comes out. But let's trace this through step by step. So if A is false, so this switch is off, and B is false, this switch is off, let's see what happens in this relay. So this relay, the magnet part is connected to this wire, which is currently not powered up. So this is the electromagnet's off, which means this switch is down, which completes the circuit. So current's going to flow. Oh no, it's going through another relay. This electromagnet, since this switch is off, doesn't have power, so this switch is closed. So the electricity can continue to flow. Where it turns on this electromagnet, causing this switch to break, and that's what's connected to the light bulb, so the light bulb is off. Okay, so sometime later, we discover that the light bulb is actually off. This is why we have computers do this stuff, because it's really tedious. Imagine just like being the electrons and sending a troop of electrons into the, I don't know, whatever. It's a pain in the butt. But this all happens very, very quickly inside the computer. Actually, the computers aren't made with relays anymore, but they did used to be. All right, here's the second combination. The first one's false, the second one's true. Now, because this switch is down, this electromagnet is on, which breaks this connection. Okay, so this wire is off, which means that this is going to stay, it doesn't matter what's happening here, this is going to stay off. This electromagnet is going to be off, which lets the power flow through from here, and the light bulb goes on. So if the first one is in the false position, the second one's in the true position, the light bulb goes on. Okay, so far, false, false, false. False, true, true. All right, now, first one's true, second one's false. What happens here? This switch is off, electromagnet's off, switch is closed. Power can flow through, comes up to here. This switch is closed, electromagnet's on, which breaks this connection, so nothing flows through here. This electromagnet's off, switch is closed, lets the power go through, light is on. Okay, so true, false, we get true.
So that false, true, is that true?
False, true was true, yeah, I just flipped back to it. That's this case. So they were symmetrical, even though they're acting in very different ways. All right, now we have both switches set to on, and both true. So both the electromagnets are on. Both of these switches are broken. So this power is going to flow to here. This electromagnet's off, because this switch is in the off position. So this switch is connected, and the light ultimately is on. So the light was on for when both switches were true, when either switch was true, but not when both were false. Then the light went off. When both switches were off, the light went off. Okay? Which leads us to the question that you've been dying to answer for all this time. Which I killed. What is this thing? All right, so keep in mind that when we had two switches, if they were both false, the light bulb was off. But if one was on, the light bulb was on. If the other was on, the light bulb was on. If both were on, the light bulb was on. This is a very complicated way of saying what. So we're starting the little clicker counter thing. Is it an OR gate? An AND gate, a NOT gate, or just something that we haven't seen yet and don't have a name for.
Are we into
the test one? Wait, when was the light off?
Effectively. What's that?
When was the light off?
When was the light off?
Never.
When both switches were open, when it was false, false. So you weren't in the beginning when we did the roll call. We're going to do the roll call again.
Oh.
Okay, all right, that should be pretty much everybody. Stop this. Display. And we have mostly people thinking it's an OR, some people thinking it's a NOT, some people, roughly the same people, exactly the same number of people thinking it is an AND. So let's go back to the notes and see what we've got. So let's summarize what we learned about this set of relays in a table. Right, these are the different cases that we tried. When A was false and B was false, the light was off. When A was false and B was true, the light was on. true, false, the light was on, true, true, the light was on. So this is called a truth table, which sounds like a torturing device, but it turns out it's just a way of summarizing a bunch of Boolean values. Okay? These are our inputs, this is our output. This truth table matches exactly 4. So the majority got that one right, but not everybody got that right. It's OR because the output, the light bulb is on if either of the two inputs is on, or both. That's an OR. So this thing is actually being an OR. Now, one of the things that makes this nice is even though we had a switch standing for A and we had a switch standing for B, the circuit didn't actually use the switch. All the circuit did was use whether or not there was power flowing over this wire. So this power could come from some other place. It doesn't have to be from a switch. In fact, it could be from some other circuit entirely. We now have a box that we can glue together with other boxes to make any logical expression that we need to make. Well, sorry, as long as it's OR. So one way to think about this now, weird. We're trying this one more. There's a dramatic animation here. Oh, I see what happened. Never mind, sorry. There's the dramatic animation. So we don't even have to think about how exactly these relays are connected. All we need to know is that if we ever need an OR gate, we can just go and copy that circuit diagram. We don't even have to think about it again. We know how to make an OR. Okay? We just have to copy exactly that series of three relays, wire them up just so, and then if the input is on or the other input is on, the output will be on. And it doesn't have to go to a light bulb either. It can go to another OR gate if we wanted to. We have that power. Now we did NOT already, right? NOT was just a single relay. So that was easy. So now we've got a black box that can make the logical function of an OR, and a black box that can make the logical function of an AND. And it turns out that that's all you need to make a black box that has the logical functioning of an AND. We have an OR and we have NOTs. We can make an AND out of that. Now we can make an AND more directly out of relays. But if we didn't want to, we'd be all set. Because look what happens here. Here's A and B are our inputs. This is a circuit that if A is on, then the output will be off. And if A is off, then the output will be on. Okay, that's what a NOT does. This is the same thing is happening here. Then whatever the output of those two NOTs are, we send through an OR gate. So this output is going to be on if either of these two is on. In other words, if either of these two is off. So this is on if either of these guys is off, otherwise it's not. You negate that. Now what have you got? You have something that's on only if both of these guys are on. That's exactly what an AND gate is. So we can fake an AND gate as long as we've got OR gates and NOT gates lying around. Okay? And again, we never have to think of, it's useful to have this in your head, but in principle, we never have to think about this again. We could just, if you didn't believe me, the notes step through all the cases, apparently with pulsing. All right, so it doesn't show it, but now basically what we can do is just ignore all this, make another black box, which is an AND gate. And if you ever need to make an AND gate, what do? You just wire in 3 NOT gates and an OR gate. Oh wait, how do you make an OR gate? Don't worry about it. Just take this out and put it in that circuit diagram from before, the 3 relays. Okay? So now, whenever you need a circuit diagram that has ANDs in it, you can just write it as an AND and know that if anybody pushed you on it, you could turn that into actual AND gates.
So this is an AND one?
So this becomes AND, yeah.
So that little part's an AND.
This is the truth table for AND, right? If both of the inputs are false, the output is false. If one's false and one's true, the output's false. If one's true and the other's false, the output's false. The only way you get true is if the first one's true and the second one's true.
And the other one was a truth table for...
We saw the word truth table a little before. That's right. I also had a truth table for NOT, which basically said, let's see, what did it look like? It looked like this. If the input was false, the output was true. If the input was true, the output is false. That's what it was. Truth tables are really useful because if you're faced with a circuit you're not sure what it does, if you just write down for each of the cases what happens, you might recognize it. It might, oh wait, this is something that ignores its inputs and always is true. Right? That's very simple. Or this is something that acts like an AND. Okey-doke. All right. So with that in mind, we can actually make a simpler, marginally simpler, version of MIM5. Okay. Yeah, I guess so. Where's our switches? So our switches are take one, take two on the first move, take one, take two on the second move. And now instead of having to have a double throw switch like we had to do before, we can just do it with one switch as long as that's we have two wires coming out of that switch, one that goes to this AND gate and one that goes to this OR gate. So this is just the same logical expression we had before. I'm not going to step through it in detail, but you can go through and compare them and see it's doing the same thing, it's just a different way of writing it. And ultimately, we get an output of the user one or the computer one. And those should light up in exactly the situations that we described before. All right, so that ends lecture two, if you can imagine such a thing. What I'd like to do is switch to lecture three, but I can take any questions that you might have on what we just talked about while I switch lectures. Everybody on board with that? Oh, darn. All right, so I had a pun clicker question, but I forgot to load it onto the clickers. All right, well, we can do it with the clickers anyway. So this lecture is about different gates, different logical circuits that we can build that have nice functions that we would like to make into black boxes and then use them in much more complicated circuits later. Again, this is the idea of reduction, where you're coming up with something that has some simple functionality that we can just reuse in a more complicated setting. Not all of these are the kind of gates we're going to talk about. These are all gates, but not the right kind of gates. So do your clickers. Oh, no, see, you can't do clickers and see the pictures at the same time. What's the question? So the question is, which of these is Lionsgate, the film production company? That would be B, right. Which of these is The Gates, a conceptual art piece that took place in New York City sometime last year? That would be C. That's right. Which one is the Golden Gate Bridge? Not a logic gate, but there are many people who know about logic gates who go over that bridge. Bill Gates. That would be, well, could be this guy. Sometimes I think about, no, sorry. This is Bill Gates, who also has made his living on top of other people who made gates. And the last one is, I think it was called Heaven's Gate. This was a cult that where they created, they were web designers, but they were also a crazy cult that were convinced that there was a spaceship waiting for us just on the other side of the moon, that's why nobody sees it. And then they all kill themselves in white sneakers. What's that?
No,
he's a kind of freaky guy. Yeah.
This
is just how he looks. I didn't draw him. Yeah.
It was behind a comet.
Oh, it was behind the Hale-Bopp. That's exactly right. It wasn't the moon, because, you know.
Why white sneakers?
They needed the white sneakers to get to, so the aliens would, I don't know. They had a story. It was very sad. And they all were dressed in the same clothes, too. Yeah, let's not focus on this too much, because I don't want anybody to do anything rash. But nevertheless, it has the word gate in it. All right. So we talked about and or not. We talked about truth tables. We can now make switches and relays. MIMBOT was a concrete example of this. What I'd like to do is show some slightly more complicated examples. But before that, I would like to show you these gates, these relays that I talked about, are really only one way of implementing logical operations. And the bits that they manipulate, the true false, are power levels on the wires, right? If the wire is live, there's current flowing through it, then that's true, and if it's not, then it's false. But that's not the only way to represent bits. And what's interesting, from my perspective, is I actually don't really understand electronics. Okay? Which seems kind of weird because you think everything I do is built on top of electronics. But what's nice about it, it's done in this reduction sort of way. That at some level, it really doesn't matter that it's electronics. It could be anything as long as it's ands, ors, and nots. And then we can just go from there. So to make this point to you, what I'd like to do is talk about some other ways that people have talked about representing bits and ands, ors, and nots. Switches and relays we talked about. In the book, Hillis talks a little bit about hydraulic valves. It turns out that you can think of flowing current through wires as kind of like water pressure in pipes. And you get the same kinds of things happening. You can actually think about what it would mean to make an OR gate or a relay out of hydraulic, like water pressure. I think that's what my kids are doing outside when they just run the hose all over the place. I think that's probably what they're doing, but I'm not sure. He also talks about how you do this mechanically with Tinker Toys. Now a bit is whether a mechanical component is sliding this way or sliding that way. This is a 1 and this is a 0. It doesn't have to be electricity. Of course, what we're most familiar with is that these are actually implemented in silicon on computer chips. And instead of relays, they actually have these things called transistors, which act a lot like relays, but they take advantage of quantum mechanical effects of very small. Okay, I don't understand. I'll be upfront with you about this. I don't really get why they work. But that's what transistors act like are these switchers. They're things that act, that they can turn on and off depending on whether or not there's power flowing into them. I heard a story where somebody described how you can actually set up a soap bubble computer where which bubbles are touching which bubbles is representing information. I actually didn't completely get that one. I have heard some very nice talks where people actually use DNA, like complex biological molecules, to do computation, to represent bits. People now are very, and that was a bit of a exciting thing, I don't know, 10 years ago. I haven't heard as much about it recently, but there's a lot of people thinking about this, where you actually have quantum bits. You have bits made out of, okay, I don't know. But again, it's some physics thing. What's cool about these bits is they actually are more, you can simulate them with regular kinds of bits, but they actually are a bit more powerful. Okay. All right, people talk about doing this with light, where you have light going through mirrors. Instead of a wire, the light bounces off a mirror and goes to another place. Instead of electronic components, there's materials that behave differently depending on how light's going through them. Nanotubes, little mechanical computers. People talk about implementing these things out of neurons, like biological cells. What I decided to do, since I didn't really have access to neurons that I was willing to give up, my kids weren't volunteering, then what I did, I came up with a way of representing bits and ends and orders and knots with dominoes and Legos. So I made a video to show you of exactly that. So here's my movie. So these are logic gates that you can buy in a toy store. First, dominoes. All right, so I'm going to represent a wire as two rows of dominoes. If it's a zero, then this row is falling, and if it's a one, then the other row is falling. Okay, so that's just a wire, information traveling from one point to another. This is a knot gate. Right? If we start in with a zero, top row, we come out with a one, bottom row. On the other hand, if you start out with a one, bottom row, it comes out as a zero, top row. That's a not. That was just being able to propagate information in two directions at once. This is an OR gate. All right, if you put in zero, zero, you get out zero, right? That's an OR so far. If you put in zero, one, you get out one. If you put in one, zero, you get out one. And if you put in one, one, you get out one. It's an OR gate. Now, I made that, and that was my son's hand knocking the dominoes over. In fact, in the notes, there's the actual domino diagram. You can actually set up dominoes and try it at home. Which I thought was completely insane, and then I searched for domino logic gates or something online and found this movie from IBM where they actually were using molecules as little dominoes bumping into one another and propagating information around. They didn't have full and/ors and knots in it, but it was still pretty impressive. All right, another demonstration, same idea but with marbles this time, with little Legos. This is a knot gate. Zero is when it's in this tube, one is in this tube, and of course it's just a switchover, just like with the dominoes, not so different. This is taking information and spreading it along two wires simultaneously. This is, I believe, an OR gate. Put in 0, 0, you get out a 0. You put in 0, 1, let the marbles go through, you get out a 1. And then one marble just goes into the trash. You put in a 1, 0, you should get out a 1. This is an OR gate. There it is. And if you put in a 1, 1, we should get out a 1. Is that what we're left with? Yeah, see, the marbles are in the 1 place. Push it down, and you get a 1. Can I freeze this for a second? Apparently not. Apparently that caused it to actually move on to the next thing. So the trick to the Lego thing was that I actually had managed to buy a little component that is a switcher. It's got two inputs and one output, and a little mechanical toggle thing. That when a marble goes through it, no, sorry, it's the other way around. One input, and then it comes out either one side or the other. If it comes down one side, then a little mechanical thing moves so that the next marble is going to go down in the other direction. So every marble that goes through comes out alternating sides. And I set it up, I set up the channels so that when you have two marbles coming down, one of them, if it goes, right, so the two zeros get combined and the two ones get combined. So if they're both zeros, they both end up in the same track. The first one then goes into the zero hole and the second one gets shunted into the trash. On the other hand, if they come down the one channel, both marbles come down the one channel, the first one goes in to the zero place and the other one goes into the trash. So it's a little hard to do it without. I actually built it and I had it last time, but people didn't really look at it anyway. So, but anyway, you can see it. You can actually stare at it because I think it's the first. Oh, there it is. Oh. Ah! All right. Anyway, it's easier to see in your notes than it is on the screen. But you can see if you just trace out what it does in all the different combinations, you get exactly an OR gate. It turns out that if you take the two little mechanical things and tilt them the other way, then it's an AND gate. It just worked out that way. ANDs and ORs are actually very, very close to each other. So could you actually build a computer out of something like this? So my domino OR gate took 24 dominoes to get the whole OR dynamics to work out. The first Pentium chip had 3.3 million transistors, which turns into roughly 800,000 gates, ANDs and ORs and NOTs. It's about 800,000 gates. So you multiply that out. If each of those gates took 24 dominoes, that would be about 19 million dominoes to make a Pentium. Now, they're smaller chips, so Pentium maybe was shooting a little too high. The world record for domino toppling. Now, you may have not known that there is a world record for domino toppling. Basically, you get, I think they're college students who do most of the heavy labor. You have these huge trucks filled with dominoes, and then you have a big, like a gym, like an auditorium, big flat floor, and everybody has their own little piece of the domino setup that they're supposed to build, and they take their dominoes, and they just sit there over the course of a weekend, and they just set up dominoes nonstop. And then when everybody's done, they have little fail safes so that if I by mistake knock over my dominoes, I don't wreck everybody else's work. I didn't even think of that until I watched the movies, and I'm like, what are those cinder blocks doing? Oh, yeah, I think I understand. So then at the end of the weekend, all the camera crews come, and the audience comes, and they go, and then all the dominoes fall down, and it's thunderously loud, and it's over in a period of, 5 minutes, and then everybody goes, okay, we're going home now. And so the most dominoes that anyone's ever done that way was 4 million dominoes. So, 19 million is not that much more. You just do 4 of those, or more, 5 of those. And so you set all that up, and it's a Pentium chip, and then you start the dominoes going, and they fall down in a certain pattern, and it tells you what the Pentium chip has as its output after one cycle. Then you have to reset up everything all again, and remember the pattern that you've got from the output side, and carry that all the way back to the input side, and then do it all over again. And the Pentium does this 60 million times every second. So if you want to simulate 1 second of a Pentium chip doing computations out of dominoes, you just have to repeat this 60 million times. And that'll give you 1 second of computation. So is it feasible? Probably not. Probably not. Unless there was some automatic way of resetting the dominoes each time. Like you put each of the dominoes on a string, like a giant puppeteer thing, right? And so they all fall down and then you go, like bowling, where the pins fall down and then they stand themselves back up. That's not on the string. But it's, if you had something like that would just put all 19 million dominoes back up, you could do this. Maybe you shouldn't. But you could. And the thing is that me as a computer scientist, I don't care if that's how computers really work or not, as long as they're fast. Because at the high level, they're going to act the same. All right, so I don't know what that was after all. I just thought it was interesting. I just want to try to do a separation of your thinking, right? There's the low-level stuff that's doing what it has to do, but we can just build on it. We don't care how it's done. And what we want to do is create our level so that people above us don't have to pay attention to how we did it, just that it works. All right, so let's think about some higher level gates that we can construct out of the things that we've already created. So it turns out that one of the things that's really useful, we talked about an AND gate. An AND gate has two inputs, and the output is on, true, only if both of the inputs are true. But sometimes it's useful to do an AND of, say, three things or more, where the output should be true if all three of the inputs are true. Okay? You can see that could be useful sometimes. Well, what's nice about this is we don't have to go all the way back down to the level of figuring out how to wire up relays. We can build a 3-input AND gate out of two 2-input AND gates that we already know how to build. In particular, let's kind of trace this out. So if A and B are both true, then this is an AND gate that takes two inputs, and it'll have an output that's true if both of these are true. If both of those are true and C is true, that means all three of them are true, and that's exactly, the output will be true in exactly that case. All right, so this is actually going to be an AND gate, a 3-input AND gate made out of two 2-input AND gates. Okay? And again, what's nice about this is we can just draw a box around it and say, I don't care how you did that. There's more than one way to do this. Can anybody see another way of wiring this up so it would act just the same, but with different connections? So here we put A and B through a gate together. And then the output of that goes with C.
Put A and C together.
Say again?
Put A and C together.
Yeah, so we could put this C wire into here and this B wire into there. It'll do exactly the same thing. It'll only be true on the output if all three of them are on. Now this intermediate wire, this wire here, will be on at a different time. But this is inside the box. Nobody needs to know about that. Alright? There's one other way. We could actually put B and C together and A separate. That'll all do the same thing. Okay? Alright? Good with that? So then, we can also talk about what it would mean to have, a 4-input OR gate. 4-input OR gate, the output should be true if any of the four of those are true. It's basically like taking it's a kind of poll, right? You know, does anybody object to me eating this peanut butter sandwich? Something like that, right? And if anybody says yes, then the answer is yes, there's an objection. And so one way to build this, and there's a bunch of different ways to build this as well, is we take A and B, we put them through an OR gate. So this wire is going to be true if either A and B are true. This wire is going to be true if either C or D is true. And this wire is going to be true if either A or B or C or D, in other words, any of the four, is true. So this is a 4-input OR gate. Okay? And there's two ways I can write it, right? One way I can actually draw a picture of it. Here's another way of writing it. What am I really doing here? I'm taking A and B and ORing them together. I'm taking C and D and ORing them together, that's this wire, and I'm taking the answer from those two and ORing that answer together. So this is kind of written out more in a mathy kind of notation. And in fact, this that I've typed here, if you actually type this into Python, it would be a 4-input OR gate. Right, so this is actually how Python expects you to talk to it. It doesn't like if you draw pictures at it, because it doesn't know what you mean. But if you type this at it, it'll understand. Okay? All right. Any questions about this? These were sort of simple warm-up examples to get going. Here's a less simple one. This is an if-then-else-5 gate. So what is this doing? So what's going on here is, imagine our input. There's a pattern of 5 bits that comes in here, another pattern of 5 bits that comes in here, and then a single bit, a control bit here. And what the control bit is like a train track switcher. And basically it's saying, if this bit is on, if it's true, powered up, then what we're gonna output at the bottom is exactly whatever was input here. These 5 bits are just gonna flow right through. Okay, there's 2 trains coming in, we get to choose which one gets to go out. If, on the other hand, this bit is false, if it's 0, then it's these 5 bits that get sent to the output. Okay? So just this one little bit gets to decide, are we going to, are we having chicken or shrimp or whatever. It's a chooser bit, right, that's going to only let one or the other of these two things flow through. So this is built by basically saying, all right, well, there's a 5-bit pattern that's going to come out. Which values are going to come out? Well, this bit should be it should be bit 1 of the first input if the control bit is on, and it should be the first bit of this input if the control bit is off. So what it's doing here, we're adding together the first bit of this and the control bit. If they're both on together, we send that through and send it through the OR and it comes out. On the other hand, if the control bit I think this really wants to be there. So let's not stare at this much more. But the point is that there's a little bit of logic that then says, all right, if the control bit is off,
then we send through whatever this bit is. If it's on, we send through 1, otherwise we send through a 0. Anyway, this pattern is then repeated, and we can create that sort of thing, something that chooses either one set of bits or another set of bits. Turns out that's going to be useful later, and we can build it. It's cool. It's just ands, ors, and nots. Nothing too surprising. So one question is, why do we keep coming back to ands, ors, and nots? And there's something really interesting about this. Well, one thing is, we've already learned what they are, so it's nice to keep going back to something we already understand. But it turns out that these gates are actually universal. What does that mean? That means that any logical function that you want to express, you can make out of just and, or, and not. You don't need anything else. And so I wanted to show you why that was. Here's what I'd like to do. Each of these are truth tables. How many different truth tables can you have on 2 inputs and 1 output? Well, we know that each truth table is going to have 4 rows in it for false, 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 true, true, false, and false, and true, true. For each of these rows, each of these cells is either going to be true or false. So this one can either be true or false, and this one can either be true or false, and this one can either be true or false, and this one can either be true or false. So how many different combinations of those can we make when we put them all together? How would you figure that out? You could enumerate them, but it's going to get a little tedious. It would be better if you have a rule that tells you how to do this. So how many different values can this box take?
Two.
How many different values can this box take? Two. All right. How many different values can these two take jointly? Well, this could be 2 different possibilities. And for each of those, this can be 2 different possibilities. That's 2 times 2 is 4. We put on another row. This one can also take on 2 different values. For each of the 4 different combinations of these, this can either be false or true. So we multiply by 2 again. That means there's 8 different ways of filling in the first 3 rows. And then 16 when you include the last row as well. So there's 16 different truth tables. I've got 8 up, so it's going to be 2 slides before I show all of these. There's only 16 different truth tables on 2 inputs. Like with more inputs, you get more different truth tables. Let's name each of these functions. All right. So this is a function that no matter what the input is, output's false. What would you call that?
Not.
Because it's not nodding anything. It's just always false. I would call it always false. It's just something that always outputs false. It's the I'm going to ignore you and be negative truth table. All right, here's another one. This one, the only true case is when both of the inputs are true.
And?
Anything else? No, just and. All right, and is what it is. All right, this one. Oh, how about this one? Let's skip this one for a moment. This one is true just for the last 2 rows. So what is this actually doing? We haven't seen this one quite before. But maybe you can have the aha insight that says exactly what this thing is doing. Do you have it? Oh, sorry, your hand wanted the answer.
A is true.
It's just A, right? It's ignoring B, and the output is always the same as A. If A is false, the answer is false. If A is true, then the answer is true. Right? That's an easy one to build a circuit for, right? It's just A. It's just a wire from the A, and you just cut off the wire from B. Just ignore it. So that one's not so bad. How about this one? Similar idea.
Whatever it means.
Yes, this is ignoring A and just paying attention to B. All right. How about this one? It's true in these 3 cases.
Or if at least one is true.
If both of them are false, the answer is false. And if either of them is true, it's true. So it's or. Exactly. All right, now we skipped a couple of the harder ones. Know that we need to pay too close attention to it at the moment. All right. This is the first of the really kind of, now you have to think about it a different way.
Not or?
not or. So if this was false and these guys were true, it would be exactly or. So if you took an or A or B, and you just negated whatever the answer was, this is exactly what you get. So this would be not or. Sometimes actually called nor. Computer scientists love these portmanteau words. All right. What about? All right. So I'm gonna flip back for a second and just show you one more of these. Did I flip back?
Yes.
All right. Let's look at. No, it's the edge. It's the next slide. Same position, though, right? No. Maybe it was on that slide. This one. This is the one I wanted. Right here. So forget and or for a second. What is this doing? When is it true? It's true when A and B are the same. This is sometimes called equiv, right? It's equality. If A and B are both false, it's true. If A and B are both true, it's true. Otherwise, they mismatch. So let's see if we can figure out how to make this gate out of ands, ors, and nots. It's not a simple, it's just, you know, or with a not in front of it, or an or where you not something before it. It's a little more complicated than that. So we want, so false gives us true. False, true gives us false. True, false gives us false. True gives us true. So one way to do this is we can make a big expression that's an or, and it's an or of all the different cases where the answer is true. So if we say not A and not B, what is this? This is something that's true only in a case where both of the inputs are false. So this is this row of the table. Okay, it's true if A is false and B is false. On the other hand, we can also have this, right? This is the bottom row of the table that's true when A and B are both true. So that's this row. If we OR these two together, this whole expression will be true exactly when we're in this case or that case. In other words, when the two bits are equal. That's kind of slick. And because we can do this kind of trick, we can represent anything we want. We can just OR together all the things we want to be true. And that works. So that is it in a nutshell. I'm going to pick it up from this point on Wednesday. I'm going to sign the homework on Wednesday.
Okay.